Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight we're talking about the future of Social Security, what will happen to it. We are in a new presidential administration. We are in a new congressional administration. New policies are set to be enacted, but we don't know what they may be. But certainly Social Security could be at the very top of the list as the new Congress and the new president take a look at what to do about it. My guests are Sarah Murphy Gray, Senior Policy and Program Associate at the Center for Global Policy Solutions, and Muriel Garr, co-host of Beyond the Bling on Sirius XM, Channel 141. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810.
Harold.
Yes, Muriel.
Before you go to that caller, and I just wanted to pose a question to Sarah, because, Sarah, we've talked about the impact of Social Security in the African-American household. Mm-hmm. But share with me, because what we pay into Social Security has a lot to do with the wages that we earn.
Absolutely.
And so there is a dependence in certain communities that are low wage earning communities to have some type of subsidy. However, we realize that Social Security doesn't pay out until, 70 and a half?
Yeah, well,
and what's the average and what's the average lifespan for an African American?
Oh, late 60s, early 70s. Absolutely.
So what's the likelihood that what is the question for an African American as it pertains to quality of life once we have become aged? Is it Social Security, or is it making sure that you have the means to even get to the age to be able to have Social Security?
And I completely agree with you on this point. So here's my perspective. My perspective is that it doesn't just need to be an expansion of Social Security. We need to go in and reform a number of different policies, healthcare, education, everything that weighs in to what we're going to have as a quality of life once we become retired. So what I'm posing to you is that we're not just talking about expanding Social Security, but we're talking about increasing the quality of education. We're talking about increasing the quality of healthcare. We're talking about offering more nutritious options to folks in, you know, predominantly African-American neighborhoods. So we don't just need to focus on one portion of this discussion. I completely agree with you. We need to be focusing on a holistic approach to how we address this issue, because it's not just about Social Security. Even though 90%, a good portion of folks a good portion of folks, African Americans, rely on Social Security for 90% of their income.
But let me, if I may, because you just said quite a bit, but certainly considering the current political climate that mm-hmm. we're in, and you're talking about, you know, reform, and reform certainly is a loaded word. Reform in what way? There has been discussion from candidate, not president-elect, but candidate Donald Trump about eliminating the U.S. Department of Education. And so what would that do to the thought that the reform could very well increase the quality of life? I'm not saying that you're mm-hmm. wrong. What I'm saying is what you're suggesting is a wish list. And House Speaker, you know, Paul Ryan has also spoken about reforming Social Security.
Mm-hmm.
How? Because there's been no discussion about specifics. President-elect Trump has spoken about lowering taxes, but and in the hopes that Social Security is not touched. But, you know, Social Security still really sits on a bit of a political tightrope,
right,
for at least the next 163 days, because we don't know what's going to happen with this new administration during that first 100 days. Just certainly something to think about when you're talking about reform versus wish list. Let me go back to the phones and I'll let you make your point. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Richard calling from Upper Marlboro. Thanks for hanging on, Richard. What's on your mind?
And thank you for taking my call. I had a question for the panel.
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible that the funding for Social Security could be supplemented by some of the military money that we keep sending to other countries?
Wow. Richard, hold on. That was not a bad wow. That was a highly intelligent Richard from Upper Marlboro wow.
Well, thank you, Harold. Thank you.
You know, but I do not know the answer to that question.
Pulling from a national defense?
Yeah, and
I'm thinking. I mean,
yeah, but hold on. Here's the thing. Again, you got to remember, we have a president-elect Trump. During the campaign, he's always spoken about a stronger military. Yeah. So it does not seem likely that the incoming administration would want to pull money from the military to supplement anything. That's a guess based on, you know, what he says.
And the market agrees with you, Harold, because defense stocks have been closing higher every day since the close of the election.
Is that a tip?
Hey, guys.
Go right ahead, Richard.
How about if we do not have a wall and we do not do this mass deportation?
So, Richard, everything you're speaking to happens to be the platform of our current president-elect. The voters have spoken. And so now the question is, how will both the Senate and the House respond based on their opportunity to put together a financial strategy for us as a country? I don't disagree with you, but apparently the voters felt that the strategy that had been put forth was one that they could live with. Now, the question is, because a large number of those voters were actually working class people, and I know Sarah has focused a lot on the African-American population that would adversely be impacted by a loss of Social Security, but there is a reality. There is a large portion of non-African-American individuals that do also rely on some form of Social Security, and their voice has yet to be heard as to how a reduction or a loss of Social Security could impact them. Sarah, your thoughts?
My thoughts are in complete agreement. There is a phrase that maybe some folks in the Tea Party use, but in other low-income communities as well, and it is, I don't want social programs, but don't touch my Social Security. Mm. And I think that really points to the fact that there's a large disagreement between the base that put Trump into office and the
President-elect Trump. Because we're going to respect.
Mm-hmm.
We give respect even if we don't get it.
That is true.
Yeah.
So that put President-elect Trump into office, right? But there's a disagreement between that base and what, Speaker of the House Paul Ryan has put forth about his opinions about Social Security. What I personally feel is that there are going to be very few checks and balances in what we see in federal government, because we have a Republican president-elect, we have a Republican House, we have a Republican Senate, and we're likely going to have a Republican Supreme Court. So I think there's going to be very few checks and balances on what's going to happen.
But with that said, there is also a constituency that has not been mentioned, and this really has nothing to do with blue or red. Mm-hmm. It has to do with gray. And we're talking about our seniors who are still very, very concerned about the future of Social Security, particularly when we've seen this, some could argue, a minuscule increase coming just for next year, you know, by all reports. And even the one I'm looking at here now, what, 0.03% increase for 2017? That's a few extra dollars a month. That does not portend well for Social Security going forward, even though that has happened under this current administration. So I think that, you know, while the political arguments can go back and forth, I think that the reality, you've got a wish list on one hand, and on the other hand, you've got the reality that all people, black or otherwise, need to do something to supplement their income for their retirement, because we just don't know what is going to happen. But Richard, I'll give you that oh wow again and salute you for your big brain suggestion. And thank you so much for listening. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Ashley, calling from Southeast. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, Harold, and hey. To your guests. Harold, I wish that you all could do something else about ending the show at 7:30 so that others can hear it.
You're absolutely right, but you know, Ashley, that's above my pay grade.
Okay, but coming from Southeast and knowing that a lot of people aren't able to turn on 141, I would really like for people to hear what's good on this show. But in addition to what I guess Mariel or the other guest was saying, people need to periodically check their hedge funds as well as your mutual funds, you know, so as to keep up with their purchasers from HR or whomever does that, having worked in the stock market. And if you find out that there's something in your mutual fund or hedge fund that you don't want that's not making the dollars, then you can just change it. And also, just like we're seeing the people march across the nation right now, I don't know why we and a number of people that are retired don't get involved with the policy writing in their states and on a national level. It is so important, so important. If we don't have the lobbyists here, as the young people are coming out in large numbers now, we need to get together and make sure that the policy is written in favor on those things that we want to see progress for us.
But you know, Ashley, I'm sorry,
no,
Harold.
Go ahead, because you're going to say what I was going to say.
Ashley, you're right on point on several things. One, people need to be involved in the politics of money and in the politics of what's going on in their lives. And I think, you know, part of it, we as a society in some ways have become complacent, and we are quick to complain but very slow to act. That's just my opinion. So, yes, they need to be involved. And they need to help form and shape legislation.
Yeah, but
Ashley, let me finish.
You're right.
Well, hold on, Ashley. Let her finish, though. Go right ahead.
But then the other part of it is people, they need to be educated and informed. So to say that you need to look at how your investments, what's going on in your hedge fund, in your mutual funds, most people don't even know what that is. And so if you don't even have a basic savings account, And because there are studies out that the average household doesn't even have $100,000 saved for retirement invested in anything. So we've got the base is a basic financial awareness that needs to happen with individuals and households.
Ashley, go ahead and make your point.
I think, and so I also think that for those of us that are in fraternal organizations, sororities, and what other organizations that we may be involved at the church, that we just need to let them know that that's what we want, policy written in our favor or in the favor of those, you know, well, however, it should be written pro for what we want. And also, we can't keep saying what people don't do and don't know, because if we continue to tell them, you know, if you beat them and, I mean, you just continue to say it, they will get it.
Well, let me say this about that. I think you make a good point, but I think you also have to understand, as Muriel was suggesting, that you do have the privilege of the knowledge. But as I, you know, because a lot of people, yes, I know what a hedge fund is, but a lot of people say hedge fund, what are you talking about? Are you talking about hedge funds for my front yard? Are you talking about hedge funds for my backyard? Are you talking about the lawn? It, you know, specifically what? And financial literacy still remains one of the biggest issues, you know, in regarding economics for the African American community. And as I said to Muriel earlier, African Americans are still very, very late to the game, particularly as it relates to policy, whether it's about Social Security, whether it's about 401ks, whether it's about 403bs and the like. You know, and we're so glad that you called, because you do know. But there are still so many people that do not know.
But she did make a good point, though, Harold. Mm-hmm. Ashley did make a good point from the standpoint of our fraternal organizations, our sororities, and especially in the African American community, the pillar, which is the church, that we do have a responsibility within those organizations to educate, enlighten, and advance.
Yes, absolutely.
And so instead of us just passing the offering plate on Sundays or Saturdays or throughout the week, we need to, at the same time as we're teaching Bible or whatever else we're teaching, we need to be teaching money in a way that people can understand it. And we need to empower them with the I can. And I agree with you, Ashley. Instead of saying what people don't know, we need to take the time to teach them how to fish versus saying, here's the fish. And when we do that and we empower people, because I have to admit, what these young people are doing now is they are taking in their hands the power of their voice to change policy, to change vote. And there's something to be said for that, because it's a resurgence of the energy from the 60s that needs to come about to bring about a change.
Ashley, thank you so much for your phone call. I'm going to take a break when we come back, more about what's happening with Social Security and what are the possibilities as we move forward into the future. We're also going to hear from John in Silver Spring and Kurt in Lanham. Stay with us. We'll be back in just a moment. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our conversation about the future of Social Security. Sarah, before the break, you wanted to make a point.
I did, and I wanted to agree with my colleague that really we need to drive home the point that African Americans really cannot solely rely on Social Security in order to live and to thrive. Unfortunately, a good percentage of them do, and they're only bringing in $14,000, if that leaves you right near or below the poverty line.
That's below the poverty line.
Exactly.
That's right. Just enough to qualify for what, food stamps?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And Medicaid, not Medicare?
Exactly.
So what quality of life is that for an individual who has given so much, 50 years in helping to build communities and whatever it was that they were doing, washing dishes, or they may have been an executive. So we need to think about something else versus what I would just call pennies in a fountain.
And to that point, if we just stick with Social Security for just a moment, how much expansion is the center proposing? I mean, even let us say if you had this wish list to come true, mm-hmm. you spoke about $14,000. Okay, well, let us say, for example, that then we're talking about on the higher end, what, $1,100 a month?
The higher end goes to like
$2,500. Yeah. Okay, but that's not where we are.
No.
At $2,500 a month, that, while that is a considerably larger amount than where we are, what, 1,100,
yeah.
It is still, that can still be, depending on where you live and how long you live, that could still be a struggle. Let's take Washington, D.C., for example.
That's $30,000, Harold.
And
to bring it into perspective.
And so
that,
you're above
exactly.
the poverty line, but you're still in poverty.
The average median income in the United States of America is less than $50,000 a year. And those are individuals that are low income wage earners.
Yes.
And so you've retired, and let's say your home is paid for. Let's say that. But you've still got health care issues. You've got it. You've got a diet that you've got to keep in order to be able to take your medication, even if you're on Medicaid or Medicare. So expanding Social Security to what point? Fourfold in order for people to have some type of quality of life. And then it comes back to the things that you outlined earlier, which I would call a wish list. How is it going to get paid for?
Right. But what I would say is, and I'll give you an example. My grandmother, right, relies on Social Security, but she was a registered nurse, right? Very much in the middle class. She still had to go back at 80 years old and work at a daycare in order to help supplement her income.
That's her point. And so what is the argument to a new administration, let us do this so that we can have just a little bit more help?
The argument is absolutely that. It's not to completely, allow Social Security to be your only source of income, but to allow the folks who rely on it more to have a larger buffer so they're not living in poverty, so that they don't have to live in multi-generation households if they don't want to, so that they are able to be self-sufficient.
How is it going to get paid for?
Yeah, and that is the $2 trillion question,
yes.
Isn't it?
That's elephant in the room.
Yes, yes, and no pun intended. Let me go back to... Let me go back to the phone lines. John calling from Silver Spring. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, I have a few comments.
Them quick, John. We've got a lot of folks on the line, please.
I understand. But I think that the focus on benefits, well, first of all, Social Security was never designed to be just. We got to look at the history and how it was put together. My point is this, is that we pay both halves of that tax. We don't pay
a half of a tax, and they take it out of our checks. When we go to the store and buy goods and services, okay, we're paying the other half of the tax. The employer sends it in, but he's not paying that. Businesses don't pay anything. Okay, so it takes a larger percentage bite out of moderate and low income people than it does upper income people.
So what is the point that you're trying to make, John?
No, I didn't have a question. I told her on this.
Okay.
Now, what I want to refer you to so that you're well educated about it.
Mm-hmm.
John Britton of the Brookings Institution did research on this years ago, back in the 1970s, the payroll tax of Social Security. And he said, it's like plucking a goose without causing the smallest amount of hissing. Okay, so get out of your mind that they just take half and the employer pays nothing.
Okay.
That's why he's in business. That's part of the cost of doing business. He raises the prices of goods and services to cover the cost. And without focusing on finance, and let me tell you, the biggest thing that people need to know is that if they tangle with it and do away with it, it's going to be a windfall for business.
Hmm. Okay. Well, look, John, I appreciate your comments. I need to go to Kurt. Kurt calling from Lanham. Thanks for calling, Kurt. What's on your mind?
Well, I think to increase the solvency, that Congress needs to increase the cap or raise the cap. Because if you make $1 million, you're going to pay Medicare tax on that million. But with Social Security, you start paying taxes at $108,000. And there's a lot of people out here that make over $118,000.
And what I would say to that comment is the Center for Global Policy Solutions completely agrees with that. One of our arguments is actually to eliminate that cap that you see on the $118,000, but also to go for that that untaxed portion, those capital gains, would be to go for that as well and to count that towards the contributions for Social Security. So what that would do is allow for extra funds towards Social Security and hopefully be able to close that insolvency that's been argued.
And so that's taxing the same population that our current president-elect wants to reduce their taxes on.
One of the other arguments, Sarah, is that, and we said this offline, mm-hmm. I did, that, you know, those that pay the most into Social Security are least likely to need it. And so it seems to me that, you know, you have those people who live in that rare air of financial stability. Why should, aside, and this is just hypothetically speaking, why should they get it if they don't need it?
Well, one, they should pay into it because we could give the common good argument, right?
Mm-hmm. But exactly what I'm saying.
You know, we could give the common good argument. But what I would also say is that, you know, to some extent, we don't know what will happen in their financial futures as well, right? You could have $1 million today. You could not have $1 million tomorrow. Mm-hmm. You still need that insurance plan, right? You still need some form of insurance, some form of backup. Even if you are wealthy today, you still need that backup outside of the money that you may have set aside to be able to pay for your retirement in the case that you lose all of that money tomorrow.
And like Muriel will tell you, $1 million just doesn't go as far as it used to.
It right? Sure doesn't.
Kurt, thank you so much for your phone call. Gloria, calling
Hello.
From Southeast. What's on your mind?
I spent most of my life as a registered x-ray technician.
Okay.
And I had a very serious work-related injury, which resulted in my having to have two very serious back surgeries. Now, what happened to me, after a period of time, the Workers' Compensation Commission stopped paying me, and I got a notice saying that Social Security was going to take over the payments, which meant that, as you know, we haven't been getting callers quite some time now.
The cost of living increase.
My income, I'm getting $1,072 a month right now.
On disability, Social Security? The disability,
Social Security.
The disability benefit?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And it goes to our point earlier, and that's less than $12,000, $14,000 a year.
Yeah. Yes.
And this is individual and
$1,180, I think.
A disability payment. And so I totally agree there's inequities in Social Security.
Mm-hmm.
And to Harold's point, there are individuals that paid into it that are on the upper income scale that really don't need the money. And then there are individuals on the lower income scale that could actually benefit from the money. But we've got to come up with a way to figure out a plan that's going to work. And the fear tactic, and I shouldn't say that, but that, you know, Social Security is going to be bankrupt in 30 years.
Yeah.
That's not necessarily going to be the answer.
No.
But we as voters, and whether we vote or not, we as citizens, Harold, we have a responsibility to be involved in the process, which I believe is what Sarah said. And we can't just sit down and receive the check once or twice a month. We've got to be involved in our own destiny, both on the political side, but also on the fiscal management side.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to manage our funds. We've got to get the information, engage in our community groups, and learn how to empower ourselves, because our money is our power.
Gloria, thank you so much for your phone call. Sarah, I'll let you have the last word.
What I would add to that is that it's not going to be an easy fight, but it's a fight that we have to make as citizens. We need to fight for Social Security for every single one of us who need it. African Americans, low income, millennials, children, we all need it.
Sarah Murphy Gray, thank you so much for coming in and sharing with us. Also, Muriel Gar, also good to see you. And I'm sure we'll see you again.
Yes, tune in on Beyond the Bling, HUR Voices, Sirius XM, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, Harold.
Channel 141.
Channel 141.
That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM, Channel 141 for this Tuesday, November 15th. I'm Harold Fisher. You can reach me on Facebook at Harold Fisher WHUR, on Twitter at H Fisher WHUR, or Daily Drum WHUR. Now stay tuned for The Connection with Lorna Newton. Good night.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU, and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.